I'm glad to be up here this morning. I'm kind of excited to share this sermon with you. It's very personal. It's very, very personal to me, anyway. On October 30th of 1938, 23-year-old actor by the name of Orson Welles went on CBS radio. That's a time television wasn't there yet, so we were in CBS of its infancy and CBS radio. And he did a dramatic adaptation of H.G. Wells' novel, War of the Worlds, which is about the Martians invading Earth. Okay? The response to that broadcast was electrifying. Journalists called it, quote, a tidal wave of terror that swept the nation. As Orson Welles told that story, people left their homes and sought safety. Many of them looked in their homes for protection. Because Welles described this as something wriggling out of the shadows like a gray snake, large as a bear and glistening like wet leather. And that face, it's indescribable. I can't bear to look at it. Now, Welles was doing this narration on the Mercury Theater of the Air. The operative word there is theater, because that's what it was. Four times during that broadcast, Welles was interrupted by an announcer who told the radio listeners that what they were listening to was pure fiction. Not an ounce of truth to it. Still, they sought cover. And that's because fear is a powerful force once it grabs our imagination. Fear is just a powerful force when it grabs you. What are you afraid of today? What in particular has your spirit anxious? What Martians don't you want to face? The reason I bring that up is because the National Institute of Mental Health estimates that 40 million adults in America, that's about one in six, suffer from some kind of anxiety disorder that makes it sometimes not possible for them to function in a normal way. It was the late theologian Reinhold Niebuhr who prayed, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I can't change, the courage to change what I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. We love that prayer. In fact, when Niebuhr, this is an interesting story, so I'm just taking a small bunny trail. He was in what I'm understanding is the church library before worship service, before he was to preach, and just scribbled that down on paper. And after the service, people just flocked to him for a copy of that prayer. We love it. The Serenity Prayer. Put it on plaques, put it on greeting cards, write it in our Bibles. Say it as we're driving in the car. But you know, putting what it says to practice could be a tall order, because we're an anxious people. And what makes us anxious is the desperate need to know what the future holds for us so that we can control it, predict it, alter it, change it, and the helplessness that we can't do any of that. Have you been anxious in your spirit this week? Some of you, if we were talking at my house over lunch, you might say, well, when I think of the geopolitical climate, listening to television, I fear that. Some of you might say, I looked at my bank account and I'm worried about. Some of you might say, in considering the protection of my own family, one of the things that concerns me is evaluating my health and my longevity, I feel anxious that, you know, and I'm right with you. 92% of what we worry about never happens, 92%. But we still are anxious about the probability of what might happen in the 8%. We can't help ourselves. So the question today is, can we do anything to stop anxiety? And can we put it to rest? That's the question today. Can you do anything about it? Because many times we say, I just can't help it. Well, I know, I'm with you. Now, it needs to be said, before I get to Psalm 27, Jesus doesn't want you to be anxious. He doesn't want you to worry. He says in Matthew 6:25, don't worry. Don't worry about what you're to eat. Don't worry about what you're to wear. Don't worry about the future. Don't worry about anything. I want to just freeze frame that for a minute and talk about Matthew 6:25. Do not worry. Number one, it has to be recognized that Jesus not only doesn't want us to worry, he commands us not to. The word don't worry is actually a command in the Greek. He commands us not to worry. As if saying, and I hesitate to say this because I don't want you to think I'm being condescending, worry and anxiety are disobedience spiritually. Okay? I read in a devotional that a person who worries isn't trusting God. A person who isn't trusting God isn't living by faith. According to Hebrews 11, a person not living by faith is difficult to please God. Again, I'm not being condescending. Simply put, though, being anxious like we are is not God's plan. Now, that's the first thing you can get out of this teaching. And the second thing you can get is anxiety is not healthy. It's not helpful for you, and it's not healthy for the people around you. Now, listen to me. The Greek word for anxiety, when Paul tells the church, don't be anxious, that Greek word, anxiety, choking, suffocating, smothering. If I were to write the Bible and do my own translation of it, an accurate translation of do not be anxious would be like a pit bull grabbing you by the throat and just squeeze. If you've ever suffered from an anxiety, a panic attack, does that about cover it? Had a counselor tell me one time, do you want to know what a panic attack feels like? Put a straw in your mouth. Pinch your nose and do all your breathing through that straw. Huh? That's why Paul counseled them, don't get anxious. It's not healthy. It's not productive. It's not helpful. But as George Gershwin said, that's nice work if you can get it. So let's turn to Psalm 27 and look what it says about curbing this anxiety of ours. Psalm 27 that starts, I memorized it years ago, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? Most scholars believe, there it is, that David wrote that psalm, Psalm 27, at a time when he was himself experiencing stress and fear. And one of the things that brought him back to reality, brought him back to the sanity of himself, was his realization that God brings light in the darkness. God is light. In fact, John 1:5 says, God is light, in him there is no darkness at all. Have you ever noticed that when we talk about being stressed, when we talk about something that really consumes us, we say we're in a dark place. We're going through a dark time. I want to talk about that for a minute. I never preached this till upstairs this morning, never told it. In October of 2014, I was pastoring in Martinsburg. And a neighbor to the church, their two-year-old daughter died. She had been sick almost since birth, had a birth disorder, and she died. And they asked me if I would do her funeral. Now, they weren't members of the church. It didn't matter. At that time, I was about a year away, year removed from my father's death. Dad died in November. This was October, a year later. That event was something that I had managed to keep down. I never dealt with my dad's death. I never grieved. I never cried. I just didn't until I did the funeral for this little girl. I got to tell you, I will never forget what that felt like. And it all came out. I mean, it just rushed from me. And for the next 6 months to a year, I was in a very, very dark place. Emotionally, spiritually, my anxiety got the better of me. And the saving grace in all of that, the saving, and I had several saving graces, but the one saving grace in all that is that I was brought back to the light of the Lord Jesus Christ. David essentially said, the Lord is my light in dark and difficult places. What am I to be afraid of? If your spirit is anxious this morning, if you're worried, if you're fearful, I want to invite you, come back to the light of Jesus Christ and stand on the rock of salvation like David did, or like I did. Now look, listen to me real carefully. I'm not going to tell you that I did not need therapy, because I did. I'm not going to tell you that I didn't need treatment, because I did. And another one of my saving graces was I had a marvelous wife. I had a very good Christian counselor. And I had an extremely supportive congregation that gave me my life back, for which I will always be thankful. 1 Peter 2:9 says, you are God's chosen people, God's special possession, that you may declare his praises of him who called you out of the darkness into his wonderful light. God calls us into his light where darkness doesn't hold a candle. David says God's light dispels fear, it protects and fortifies, and it rescues. Please, if you're in a dark place today, and the percentages tell me that somebody is, 1 in 6. Please tell somebody. Tell Liz, tell me. I will, she will, we will walk you back into the light. So that's one thing David did. He went into the light. Let's talk about a second thing he did. You know, David was a king. And as a king of Israel, he had everything at his disposal. Anything the world wanted, he could get. Anything he needed, people waited on him hand and foot. But with that said, there was one thing that he wanted. One thing out of everything he could have had. Now, before I tell you what it is, how about you? When you're anxious, maybe you're anxious today, what do you ask God for? What do you need to feel settled in your spirit? Do you need an answer to prayer? Or a cure? Money in your bank account? A passing grade at school? A hedge of protection around your marriage? David could have asked for all of that. And I'm convinced that God would have given it to him. But he asked for one thing. And I'm going to tell you what it is right now. Verse 4. Listen to it. One thing I ask of the Lord, and that I will seek after. Here it is. To live in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. To live in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold his beauty and seek him, inquire of him. You know what David says? He's asking to be in church. The only thing that I want, he says, is to be in your presence where God is, to be at home with God. Why? Because the presence of God is a powerful healing agent. It just is. The presence of God is a powerful healing agent. I once pastored a woman. She was not a member of my church. Her boss actually asked me if I'd talk with her, and I did, and we forged a relationship. But she was abused by a close and trusted relative when she was a kid. And that left her with a lot of emotional and spiritual scars. Even though we were long removed from that nightmare, she still had anxiety and fear, especially around people. And she used to come to our church, and I'd be in my office, and I'd see her car pulling in. And she wanted me to open the door so she could go in the sanctuary and sit. And I did. She'd sit there for an hour. She'd sit there for more than an hour. I wasn't with her. I didn't know what she did. I assumed she was praying and meditating. I mean, that's what she would do. And she confessed to me one time, and I want to share this with you, that our sanctuary was the only place in her whole world where she felt 100% safe. One thing I ask and this I seek, to dwell, to remain or sit. That's what it means. To dwell in the house of the Lord, to seek his presence and behold his beauty. David, listen, David wasn't making a pitch for coming to church every Sunday. He was promoting the wisdom and emotional health of being in God's presence. Just being in his presence. Do you have a safe place you can go to be in God's presence? For some of you, it's the car. Just don't fall asleep. For some of you, it's the sunroom. That's where, you know, one of my places. Do you have a safe place where you can go and be in God's presence? You know, I didn't know this about myself until I prepared this sermon. But you know I get up before the chickens, and I've been doing that for a while. I don't know why. My life coach told me I get up in the middle of the night. It's not that bad, but I'm up at 4:20 every morning. It's when I set my clock, and I get up at 4:20. Many times I'm up by 4. And I pray, and I do devotions. Now, you know that. I've told you that. But this is what I never knew. That time is precious to me, and the reason it's precious to me is because Kathy's in bed, the phone doesn't ring, the neighbors are in bed too, the dogs are sleeping, and that's the one time in my life where I feel 100% safe. Do you feel safe in this place? This place? Dr. William Willimon said, one of you shaking your head, yes, I appreciate that. Dr. William Willimon said, it would be interesting to have a discussion with you. Is the church, is this worship space, is our church a place where you feel safe from anxious times? You think about that. So David walked in the light of the Lord. He sought the light of the Lord. And David sought his presence and stood in the presence of the Lord. And David did one more thing to quell or to stop his anxiety. One more thing. This one's the stupidest thing. I thought, Lord, I'm not going to preach this. But it's truth. What he did was he sang. He sang. Years ago in Adams County, I was visiting my friend Anna Kepner. She might hear this. I don't know if she will. Probably not. But I was visiting my friend Anna Kepner. Anna's a senior citizen, lives by herself, big old home that was hers when she was a kid. And outside of her window is a tall pine tree. And when I went to see her, it was the day after a sufficient snowstorm. It was a big storm, 10 inches, 12 inches, I don't remember. But I remember walking into her house and beholding that tree through her glass window. It was full of snow. The boughs was beautiful. And she told me, yesterday I spent my time looking out the window at that tree, and on the tip of a branch was a cardinal, a red bird, singing into the storm. And she looked at me and she says, into the storm the cardinal sings. And I went home, and I got out my Bible and I wrote it in the cover of my Bible. Into the storm, the cardinal sings. I read that singing in times of fear and anxiety is not an escape from reality. It's a clenched-fisted determination. We're not going under without a fight. We sing into our belief. I'm not talking about the king and I. You know that little tune? Whenever I feel afraid, I hold my head erect and whistle a happy tune so no one will suspect I'm afraid. That's denial. That's denial of the threat. That's denial of your feelings. I'm talking about an attitude of the heart that refuses to go quietly into that good night. Do you know that Psalm 27 was a song? Most of the Psalms were songs. They were sung. David sang from anxiety into belief. Dr. William Willimon was talking about the power of singing. This might resonate with a few of you. He was pastoring a church that was really down on its luck. they didn't have a split, but they had conflict, and a lot of members had left, and you know, there was a skeletal crew of faithful still remaining, and they weren't making budget. They couldn't pay their bills. They didn't have enough money coming in to pay their bills. And the writing was on the wall. The church was dying. And he was terrified that he was going to be the pastor that buried them. Now, I'll let him tell you the story. He said, I couldn't sleep at night. I had no appetite. Couldn't eat. Every waking moment was consumed with thoughts of doom. I identify with this. I dreaded going to church on Sunday morning and hated standing up in the pulpit. I'd get this sick feeling when I had to look at the church and look at the congregation. We were just about down for the count. And he said, one Sunday morning, true story, the worship leader picked for the last song, a mighty fortress is our God. A bulwark never failing. Our helper, he amid the flood of mortal ills prevailing. And Woman said, you know, as I sang that song, I found myself shouting it. The prince of darkness grim, I tremble not for him. And he said, tears came to my eyes, and they weren't tears of sadness. They were tears of joy and gratitude and contentment. And I looked out at the congregation, and they got it. And we sang that hymn of faith with gusto. And then he said, after that, nothing about our situation changed all that much, but we did. And because we changed, everything changed. In singing that hymn, our fears were relieved, and we knew deep down inside, God is with us. Psalm 96 says, sing a new song to the Lord. Declare his praise and the marvelous things he has done. Somebody wrote in Psalm 59, I will lift up my voice to sing, O my strength, for you came to my defense, and you have shown me mercy. Can you sing? Can you make a joyful noise? I sing all the time. Some of you shaking your head, don't do that. It's embarrassing, you know. Carol usually knows when I'm in the building because as soon as I come through the door, I'm singing, isn't that true? Or whistling, one of the two. And when I go out of the door, I'm usually singing or whistling. I'll tell you how bad it gets. Years ago, it was Christmas Eve. And my friend Joe Rankin here had left, and my sister had left, and all the family that comes for our annual Christmas Eve party had left. We were in Gettysburg. And I saw the last one. It was probably Joe and I waved them on their way, and I stood on the front porch, and I started to sing. I don't know what I was singing. I started to sing. Now, my neighbor across the street from me, his sister, whom I did not know, was in the trunk of her car getting out her bags to spend the night. I found this out later. And she walked into the house and she said to her brother, boy, is your neighbor ever drunk? He said, which neighbor? The one right across the street. Oh, that's Joel. How do you know he's drunk? Oh, he's out there singing at the top of his lungs. Oh, he does that all the time. But can I tell you something? Never, ever underestimate the power of music. Amen, Mike. And the power of music and the human voice, they are, Sierra, transformational. And you say, I can't sing. Make a joyful noise. I'm going to close with the last chorus of David's song, Psalm 27, where he said, I remain confident. Now, after all of this, though an army besiege me, though my parents forsake me, I remain confident that I will see the Lord in the land of the living. Be strong. Be strong and take heart. And wait for the Lord. Come on up, praise team. Send us out of here with something good.